Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
Robert is being chased, thrown on the run, and it is caught! Touchdown, Keenan Allen! What a great...
My goal is not to break you. My goal is to make you harder to break.
Comes back, number six!
Huge sack by Joey Bosa.
Touchdown! 90-yard touchdown!
Picked off at the 8-yard line by Derwin James.
Sets his feet, takes a shot downfield, has Knighton. Caught! Touchdown, Chargers!
Grab your lunch boxes and go attack this day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
Hey, what is happening, everybody? It is April. Spring has sprung in the north. The buzz of free agency has come and gone, and we are just 3 weeks away from the 2025 NFL Draft. What a time to be alive. This is the Thunder Down Under Chargers podcast. It is good for myself to be back in the studio for the first time this year. I'm with my boys Jack and Alistair, and something very exciting for the TDU crew. They're back. Great friends of the show from the Guilty as Charged podcast, Steve Haglund and Tyler Schoon. Welcome, fellas.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having us. Happy to be here. That Philip Rivers clip of the 90-yard touchdown will always get me going. Miss and love Philip Rivers. Happy to be here today with you guys.
Yeah, excited. That was a great, great intro. I'm a little jealous. I think, Stephen, we got to work on our intro because that was pretty darn good. But happy to be here. Happy to be back for sure.
Awesome. Yeah, I think we touch on a few copyright infringements there, but you know,
it's probably a little harder for us. Yeah.
You guys in your big pond probably wouldn't get away with that, but for now,
you don't want one of these songs because your listeners will just say, "Oh, can you update it? Why do you still have this player in it? He's no longer a Charger."
Yeah,
it's just not worth the squeeze.
Our current YouTube banner, I think, has Keenan and Joey, so half of our banner is completely useless now.
Yeah.
Oh, well, what do you do, like? You just got to keep putting out the content, and eventually you come to the intro and outros and tidying all that stuff up. But thanks for the kind word, fellas. Yeah, it's great to have you guys taking some time out of your day to jump on. As I said, we've got the draft coming up, and figured that why not touch on a few of the recent signings for the team, and let's put together a Chargers big board and see if we can kind of put our heads together, the three, Al, Tyler, and Steve, all big tape guys. Jack and I will be prompting questions and seeing if we can't give the fans a bit of an idea of where the Chargers might be looking or planning come April 25th. Just quickly, some new signings since the boys were on air last. The team has brought in Andre James, center from the Raiders, 1 year, $1.17 million. And Tyler Conklin, tight end from the Jets, another 1 year deal, up to $3.2 million, as seems to be the theme of Joe Hortiz, 1 year up to. Tony Jefferson returns as well. And oddly, in the last 48 hours, the Chargers have signed Trey Lance, backup quarterback from the Dallas Cowboys. So a bit of an interesting one there. But any thoughts from you guys on some of these, I guess, like positional competitions, but the Trey Lance one really kind of surprised me a bit.
Yeah, the up to $6 million that was reported was very high, and a lot of people were not happy about it. The comments to the Chargers post were very, very upset. He's not going to make that much money, right? Like, it's just not a possibility. It's a weird contract framing, but I think at the end of the day, the Chargers looked at what happened in last year's training camp when Justin Herbert got injured and how inefficient practice was and how tough it was for them to move the football on offense in the preseason games, and said, we're not doing that again this year. So Taylor Heinicke is back. Trey Lance is back. And I think they will at least be able to run an offense in training camp. And I was at one of the practices after Justin Herbert got injured last year, and the offense just had no legs to it. They couldn't do anything. Granted, the Chargers defense turned out to be very good, but at the time we had no idea what the Chargers defense was going to be. And so when they were struggling that much to move the football, it was very concerning. And yeah, Easton Stick isn't great, but it was very, very concerning to see. So they said, we're going to bring two backups in, and we're going to make sure that we can actually run an offense in training camp and in preseason. And I think I understand that. the up to $6 million part is crazy, but I think Trey Lance as your QB3 is a good signing. You know, it's a good depth piece to have for this team for the summer parts of the season.
Yeah, totally fine with me as someone who attends training camp and has to watch these games or these practices. After a while, I think Steven and I were at the last scrimmage they had at Jack Hammett Sports Complex in Orange County. And just watching after Herbert, you know, doesn't play a ton or has one series or whatever, watching the rest of the quarterback play was not great. We kind of just sat there and laughed a little bit at how rough it was.
Yeah.
Watching that. And I think, I don't know if Cornelius Johnson makes the roster last year with better play. I don't know if Brendan Rice has a better preseason or maybe even more of a role in 2024 with better quarterback play, but I think it would help. I think between those two, and I forget the third most targeted receiver that wasn't Sammy Fajoko.
Jalen Johnson.
Yeah, I think it was like three or four catches on 20-something targets. I mean, it was some awful number because of the quarterback play. And Harbaugh will go to bat for anybody and everybody. And even he last preseason was going, this quarterback play is not very good. Like, we need to get somebody else in here. So, of course, they go get Perez. They trade for Heinicke. And that's great. Like, they started to solve those issues. So, some people in the media are having a field day with this Trey Lance thing because Colin Kaepernick that one time, and that was a whole different thing.
Yeah.
For some reason, people get bored in the offseason. They talk about Herbert being traded and this quarterback and that, whatever. I'm fine with them adding a quarterback three. I pray he doesn't see that incentives. I hope he take your money. Great. I hope you never see those incentives because I will be selling my season tickets at that point.
Yeah. Hey, Steven, I've got a question for you, and it's not about Trey Lance, but as a sort of an offensive line guy, I'm super interested what you think of the center position. You know, we've got Andre James, yeah. Zion Johnson is apparently going to transfer to center or is taking reps there, you know, during training camp. But we've also signed Bradley Bozeman. I'll kind of put you on the spot a little bit. How do you see that playing out before we get into the draft? Because that kind of might shift some things about what kind of questions I might ask as a GM. But how do you see this interior? I mean, my first opinion when I heard that Zion Johnson was going to move to center is I don't know how transferable it is. I remember you speak a lot about, you know, right tackle to left tackle to right tackle. It's actually harder than people think it is. Mm-hmm. What's your opinion on moving from a left guard to a center position? Because what they're kind of I don't know what they're doing. Are they just trying to fill a gap and draft a center? Or is it going to be one of those three guys?
I mean, if you listen to Daniel Popper, it sounds like it's going to be one of those three guys, and they'll draft a potential left guard to challenge for that spot. I don't know. Tyler and I have our doubts about Zion to center actually happening. You know, we were huge fans of Zion Johnson, and most of the draft community was. We just happened to catch a lot of flack for it because we were in Las Vegas, and we were very excited when they drafted him. But the thing that he has consistently struggled with the most is how to like properly identify stunts and blitzes and reacting, you know, at appropriate times to those stunts and games. And there are definitely flashes that he can do it. But to me, taking a guy who struggles with the kind of processing stuff that he struggles with at left guard and saying, we're going to put all the processing stuff on your plate at center, to me, that's not an appropriate answer to his struggles. And that's not an appropriate answer to, you know, his potential ceiling being played out here. So the other aspect of this that we've talked about on our show is that there were some very clear athleticism issues with Bradley Bozeman playing center last year, where he just couldn't get to the reach blocks and the pulling absolutely. And the things that they were asking of him. And so Zion would definitely help there in the run game. So it clears a certain bar of athleticism that I think this offense requires, but then mentally as a pass protector, I just think it's just going to magnify his potential struggles when he has to also identify we're sliding here, we're sliding there, you know, this is the mic, this is that. And it just is going to place a lot more stress on him than he was already experiencing and struggling with. So that's my take. I think the run game will improve with Zion at center, but the pass protection, mm-hmm. I think, will struggle with a little bit more.
Right, and that's assuming if he moves to center that you find your left guard that works for your run game as well and pairs as well as he did with Slater. I've been very cynical this entire time about Zion playing center at all. Frankly, I think it is Zion at left guard unless they take someone at 22 to play over Zion, which I find unlikely given the needs of the roster. And ultimately, I know people want Andre James to start. I think you're going to see for a very good while that Bozeman is the starter. And sometimes it's just follow the money, like Occam's razor. What's the most simplest like answer here? Simplest rationale. And like Bozeman's cap hit is $5 million. And I think he has more guaranteed money this year than Andre James' entire cap hit. So I just think you're going to see Bozeman start for a while. I don't know if that's all the way to like week one and then suddenly like, okay, they finally make that decision or what, but I think people are going to see and maybe be surprised by Bozeman actually being the starter for a good while in the off season. I don't know how much they're really going to change things. From my perspective in the draft, I think they do have to go get a guard because one, I think you want to upgrade from Zion or get ready to move on from Zion next year. Or I've heard that teams think that the Eagles were very lucky to get as many games as they did out of Becton, given some of the injury history there. And I think the Chargers need to be prepared for a guard to slide into that right guard spot or just, you know, be the guy next year ahead of Zion or instead of Zion.
Mm. Yeah.
You'll see, Stephen, you actually played and know about the O-line. Jack is our resident O-line guy amongst the three of us. So now we kind of defer to your better Zion and center knowledge.
Yeah, it works for me.
I think I've got a question that opens up maybe a broader discussion about the offseason, and we can use the Tyler Conklin signing as evidence. So you sign Tyler Conklin, a player who is a contributing tight end. He's had pretty steady, dependable play at two different spots. Excellent hands, right? Doesn't drop the ball. If you want to see one of the better red zone touchdown catches, you look at the one last year against the Patriots. Rodgers zips it in. Ball doesn't move as he's getting hit. But I think this offseason, entering the process, Chargers have $90 million of cap space or thereabouts, second most in the league. They have stuck steadfast to this approach that they don't really want to overspend in their minds. They don't want to shop at the top of the market. So far, they haven't even traded for, you know, a Mark Andrews or a Dallas Goedert or someone who might be viewed as a plus player at their position. They've been happy to roll in guys on short-term contracts rather than extend on three-year-plus deals. Do you think there's any room for criticism of that approach? I'll let maybe you take it first, Stephen, but interested in it because, you know, you can see each of these signings, they make sense on paper, they fill a role, but maybe are they limiting the ceiling on this team and should they have made some splash with all that money? Have they been too stubborn?
I think there's definitely room to criticize there, and I would actually use the Puna Ford situation as kind of like the main thing there, because if you are going to be conservative in your external free agents, I totally understand that approach to a certain extent. You know, you take your value signings and there is some merit, right, to being a little bit more conservative there. But the Ravens have done that while also retaining their own key pieces. Like in Baltimore, they very, very rarely ever let a player like Puna Ford and what he meant to their team walk in free agency for what is really a manageable contract. You know, it was reported as like 3 years, $30 million. Really, it's like 3 years, 26, 27. You know, and to me, that's a contract well worth paying for the bang that you're getting with Puna Ford. And so if you're going to be a little bit more calculated in external free agency, that's fine. It's cool with it. But you got to bring the guys back who you need to bring back. And Tyler and I did a non-negotiables show in free agency, and we did one for the draft as well. And one of the things we hit on first was they have to bring back Puna Ford because his value to the team is so much higher than anything you could find in external free agency or the draft. And it would have just given them so much more flexibility in the draft if you have that guy back. So I understand not going after, you know, guys like, Ryan Kelly's of the world, you know, to be an expensive center. There's injury concerns, things like that. I understand why they didn't go pursue like a Milton Williams, who's making $26 million a year for the Patriots now. But the fact that they let a guy like Puna Ford walk, I think that to me is like the biggest criticism of the offseason approach so far.
Yeah, I understand them not wanting to spend a ton of money on question marks. And this, unfortunately, this free agent class had a ton of question marks. The best guys, the most expensive guys, all question marks, injuries, lack of production, one-year wonder, you name it. And that's part of the reason they're hitting free agency is they're not, you know, the best guys don't always hit free agency. But like Steven said, you know what you have in Puna Ford. And I don't recall, I can look it up while we're talking, we were given a number regarding like Puna Ford's surplus value to the team last year. And that number exceeds what the contract, his cap hit would be this year with the new contract. So like, sure, he'd be making more, but the value he brought to the team last year in terms of surplus value, like the dollars assigned to how much value he brought, would be more than the cap hit this year. So even if you gave him that quote unquote bigger contract, he still provides more surplus value where it's still worth it to you. Like if it's, I don't know, $5-6 million cap hit this year, he plays like 10, you know, whatever it is. So I was definitely bummed by that. I appreciate the idea of trying to draft proof and get like signing Conklin, I think is wonderful. Signing James, I think is wonderful. All these things make sense. The best way I can describe though, kind of how I feel about the Chargers right now, and that's before they draft 10 players and they could sign plenty more, trade for others. The best way I can describe them is I don't think that the team right now can beat the Texans they played last year. And so I like looking at this team right now with the small adjustments that they've made. Do I get to fly to Houston and watch them win that game if this team played last year? I don't think so. So I think that they are.
Did you fly to Houston for that, Tyler?
I was there for that one.
Sure did.
I got to be there in person for that
red eye flight too.
Red eye flight. I was there and back in 24 hours. That was neat. Had a great time other than the 3-4 hours I was at the game. And really it was just a half. Yeah. So I think that they are like draft proofing themselves. I think they have a higher floor throughout the entire season. But push comes to shove, you're in the playoffs. Is this team competing with the teams in the AFC that got there? I really don't think so right now. But they have 10 draft picks, and we'll get into the draft. I would have liked one true big needle mover. And you could argue that's Becton. But again, I am still concerned overall.
Mm. So we've said all this same stuff. It sounds like we're all in alignment.
Yeah.
Andy, why don't you tell us a bit about this Australian guy who we've seen pop up, because that's what we really want to talk about on Thunder Down Under, right? Before we get into this big board.
It would be absolutely remiss as the Aussie Chargers podcast to not talk about the IPP signing, Jordan Pataia. 31 caps for the Wallabies, the Australian National Rugby League team, 58 for the Queensland Reds. He's a very athletic, I think 6'4", I think, about 260 pounds, athletic backliner, translates apparently quite suitably to the tight end position. So really exciting. A lot of kind words from Jordan Mailata about, you know, his physical ability, the kind of guy he is, and how awesome this is for his career and his future moving over. So wish Jordan all the best. Hopefully he lands himself. I mean, IPP, he's got that exemption sort of spot on the roster. Hopefully it goes really well. We've already been tapping into him, hopefully to get him on the show and have a chat with us, which would be cool too. But, that's exciting. Competitors welcome, right? And that's sort of the vibe that I've got with a lot of these 1-year deals. Sure, there's the Joe Ortiz comp pick, system. If we can get like a Najee Harris in to have a great year and then he walks next year after his deal runs out, then it works well for the comp pick formula. Andre James coming in as well, you know, resigning Bradley Bozeman. It's all getting guys in to compete for the spot and find the best sort of make us feel better about Trey Pipkins not playing at right guard and being a great backup tackle, right? Like, you know, put guys in the position to succeed as best as possible rather than forcing them into a role that we need. And, you know, after 1 year, we can only do so much. But now there's a little bit, you know, not as exciting as you guys have said with not making the splashy signings. But there's obviously a philosophy there. So, without further ado, guys, let's get stuck into the Chargers draft board. The meat and potatoes of today's show. Like I said, Jack and I are going to utilize our three scouts, Al, Tyler, and Steve, and we're going to take a look at what the Chargers need and what is the value at the various picks. Comparing players who may be available there. A lot of speculation, but a lot of fun as well. And just try and get maybe like a bit of an understanding to the lay fan who doesn't watch college tape or watch much college football and just sees names get mocked to the Chargers and, you know, just because they're a good wide receiver, are they the right wide receiver to come to the team? You know, are we going to want to draft another guy that plays inside? Or do we want that guy that can open up the outside of the field for Justin Herbert, provide more weapons, that sort of thing? So, Tyler, how do you feel about this
Who's GM Joe Ortiz and who's assistant GM Chad Alexander?
Just trying
to work it out. I'm guessing Andy with the shaved head is the Joe Ortiz type. No?
Well, neither really have hair. I'm gonna throw.
That's true. Chad is also very bald.
Yeah.
Although I'm glad neither of them's tried to make themselves look like Chad for the show. Probably would not have gone down as well.
Yep. No.
Didn't even need to. I'm gonna let Jack be Joe Ortiz today. He's the wiser teacher, the wiser head. If we will, Jack can be Joe Ortiz, and I will be Chad Alexander, fresh off a spattering of GM interviews in the off season. Mm-hmm. He's just been kind of living
bad
his
luck,
life,
mate.
Now he's it's the story of my life, really, just floating around.
Okay, Chad, can you just, you've spoken for a lot. Daddy needs to talk now, okay? All right, Daddy's going to take the conversation. GM's going to come in. All right, so I think you were going to give it to Tyler first, Andy, so I'll keep it with Tyler. But my first kind of question is, and this is what I want you to do, all three of you, is that where do you think the best value positions are on days 2 and 3? Mm-hmm. And what does that mean for our first round pick? Mm. So I want you to give me your best first round pick, given some value that we can find in rounds 2 and 3 and later. All right. So best first pick, best scheme fit, Tyler, let me know. Convince me.
Sure. Okay. So the best scheme fit and the best outcome, I think, for the Chargers at 22, in my opinion, is Kenneth Grant. I think Stephen Michael Colson Loveland there. And it's a strange answer given that the depth and the best class, the position group in this class is defensive tackle. But I watched Kenneth Grant in full today. I waited a while and I watched him before the show because I figured he might come up. And I just don't think there's anything really like him at that spot or after. I appreciate Derek Harmon. Walter Nolan has some concerns. I think Kenneth Grant is a whole different animal. And the Chargers desperately need that guy, that pass rushing defensive tackle option. Can he play nose? Sure. Is he an enormous human being who could play nose and play the run? Absolutely. What he did when I watched him like 2023 against Ohio State, just absolutely bulldozing offensive linemen. I think I have to go with him there. And it's not because I don't trust myself to find a defensive tackle in the draft later on or a nose tackle later on. It's that I would prefer to double down later on. So at 22, I would prefer to go with someone like Kenneth Grant. I would understand Loveland. I could see the Chargers doing what they did last year with Alt McConkey and going with it felt like, and I wrote as much before the draft, once if you don't get your guy in the first round or even maybe the first like three tackles in the first round last year, there's a cliff. And if you look at how things shook out last year, there was one. So instead of going neighbors and then offensive lineman, they went alt and receiver, and receivers where they played the strength of the draft, which was receiver, tons of depth there. So they could do that. But to me, the best possible outcome, I think, barring Abdul Carter somehow getting to Los Angeles, is Kenneth Grant, in my opinion, because I have zero reservations about the scheme fit. Obviously, I know that is the most likely route to the best possible outcome.
See, this is where your scouts are going to not disagree, but just going to put different opinions out there. Mm-hmm. Watch a lot of Kenneth Grant. Really get it. I get it. He's still young, 333 pounds, like long arms, played in the system. Mm-hmm. I viewed him as a kind of a nose tackle type build who played like a finesse player. And I thought I would have loved to see more reps with him bulldozing guys or holding up against double teams. I actually thought he struggled to hold up against double teams. And although he's very good off the snap and agile for a bigger man, doesn't necessarily finish plays because he's so big that he does struggle to kind of finish on the quarterback, though he does create some pressure. So I think he's kind of an early second round grade kind of guy. I like him. I think his upside's pretty good. I see him not as a tweener type, but not really elite in any one area yet. But it doesn't mean that he can't develop into it. I would be happy with that outcome. But who I'm going to go to bat for, Jack, to answer your question, I think the depth at wide receiver is really good second round. So if you don't want to spend on a Golden or a Luther Burden or someone, I think in our second round we'll find someone we quite like. Edge depth, DT depth, both really good. You could make the argument it drops off at edge, so you might want to hit that now, but the depth of those positions are good. Where I think the depth isn't as good personally, tight end and interior offensive line. Mm-hmm. So I think if you miss out on a, call it a Booker or a Gray Zabel here, I think there's a real jump and a teardrop by the time you get to the end of the second. And for tight end, if Colston Loveland is on the board, that's the guy we're targeting, guys. GM, assistant GM, boss. He's the guy. He's more of your Joker type. We've already got Will Disley, who can play attached to the line of scrimmage, predominantly a run blocker. We've got a guy who Harbaugh's familiar with here. You see him run to the flats. It doesn't look like Tucker Fisk. He catches that ball in the flats and he takes off and goes.
Straight.
He's a contested catch. People have criticized his run blocking, but you can see that in the effort and competitive instinct is there. And for what we'll be asking him to do on split zone or as detached from the line of scrimmage, I think he's adequate initially. And he would just be that weapon that Herbert hasn't really had yet from the tight end position. And I do not think it is a coincidence that the two best quarterbacks of the past 20 years had Gronk and Kelce playing for them. And I think Loveland's upside is so good that he could be one of these top three receiving tight ends in the NFL, a Brock Bowers-like impact. Steven, Loveland's the guy if he's sitting there for me.
No, I completely agree that Loveland is the guy for me. I think it's the safest path to finding like a real, you know, super boost essentially on offense. Like I think this opportunity to get Colston Loveland opens up space vertically for Ladd McConkey. It opens up space vertically for Quentin Johnson. It gives them the opportunity to really go out and create mismatches where Colston Loveland can play in the slot. He can play in line. He can play as an X receiver type role as well. The only real corner DB I ever saw him give him trouble was Jahdae Barron, who's a unique freakazoid himself. But outside of that, I think he's an opportunity to go out and create mismatches. If you flex him out wide and teams have a safety go out there, he's going to win that matchup. If they follow him with a linebacker, he's going to win that matchup. So to me, Colston Loveland just creates a real opportunity to maximize your offense at the best level. To circle back to Kenneth Grant, I think the argument for Kenneth Grant for me is this, just the potential of his athletic traits. And I know he didn't end up testing like, you know, a 99th percentile athlete, but for his weight, he tested extremely well. And the flashes that he shows on tape, like there's a rep against USC where he is rushing as a stand-up rusher with his, you know, with in a two-foot stance instead of a three-point stance. And he does a little Euro step cross chop against the center and he gets home on Miller Moss. And he just does stuff like that, that there aren't many people his size that do. So I do agree that there are definitely some technique concerns. There are definitely some pad level concerns as well. I think he can play a little bit too high at times.
Can he fix that, Steven, because he's so big?
I think so. I think with Mike Elston, you can fix that. At this point, Mike Elston can have whatever he wants. Like Mike Elston can do no wrong, in my opinion. So that is where I'm at. I think for me, it's Colston Loveland is pretty clearly number one. And then I'm actually going to say Derek Harmon here as well. Derek Harmon has a bit of a different vibe to him than all of the other defensive tackles because he also at one point was 330 pounds and was a run stuffing defensive tackle for Michigan State. And then this past year, he dropped 20 pounds and was the most productive interior pass rusher in college football. And so he can give you the interior pass rush juice right now. And he's a certified run defender. He has that experience. He has that role in his background knowledge. So he is older than Kenneth Grant. He's a little less athletic, I would say, given the size. But when it comes to a floor, I think he has a higher floor right now than Kenneth Grant on defensive tackle. And those are the defensive tackle position is one I like Tyler. I would like to see them attack early to try and get some pass rush juice in the room right now.
So, Steven, just to clarify before I pass it on to my assistant GM with his question, are you saying 1A is Colston Loveland and 1B is Derek Harmon?
I'm saying one is Colston Loveland and two is Derek Harmon.
Two is Derek Harmon. Awesome. Thank you very much.
Same.
Nice.
There we go. Awesome.
And I do also want to say I agree with Alistair about the lack of other tight ends. Tyler and I have caught a lot of flack for that this offseason, but we don't love the other options outside of the first round.
I'm interested. You brought up Jahdae Barron from Texas. Obviously, the Jim Thorpe award winner.
Yeah.
How do you feel? How do you guys feel about where the cornerback room is as it stands? It's very young. It's quite thin. Although, like, bringing in a bit of veteran help with Jackson,
Dante Jackson
didn't really push. Didn't really push the dial for me too much. Like, where do you see cornerback as a position of need? I guess Jahdae Barron is an athletic all rounder, really. And he has been mocked to the Chargers at 121. Oh, 22, sorry.
Yeah, Tyler and I love Jahdae Barron. He is, to me, like a perfect fit in this kind of defense. And I think specifically, you know, his potential as a slot defender is tremendously high. And the Chargers use Derwin...
Higher than Jasir Taylor's?
Yes, much higher than Jasir Taylor's. You know, the Chargers are in a bit of a weird spot with Tarib Still, where I still kind of think he's best suited in the slot, but he can play outside. He showed that last year and have to give him a lot of credit for that. But when Derwin James was not playing in the slot, the passing defense did kind of, you know, take a bit of a nosedive when he was not able to do his thing in there. And Alistair is pointing this out on social media, where Derwin did kind of take a little bit to get his footing going in the new system a little bit. So there's also a world out there where Derwin James, who's this athletic freak, is getting a little older. You maybe have to give a bit of a succession plan for this kind of role that Jesse Minter wants to use, where you can have a versatile chess piece
inside these Chargers walls. Don't say that out loud. That's good. We've got to future-proof this roster.
Yeah, and I like, are there other position needs that they should take ahead of corner? Yes, absolutely, because they need, like, starters at defensive tackle. They need a starting potential left guard. They need a starting tight end. They need a starting receiver, all this stuff. But if you're just trying to take the best football player, I think there's a real argument that Jahdae Barron is graded higher than the guys that we are talking about because of his potential as a slot corner, outside corner, safety as well, which he did at Texas, ran super fast, jumped super high, can blitz, can tackle. Like, he is, to me, like the prototypical Jesse Minter defensive back, where he's not a corner, he's not a safety, he can just move around and play everywhere. And the Chargers need somebody else besides Derwin James to do that. You know, and so if they took Jahdae Barron, I would completely understand. I think it is on the table. It's just not my preferred option given the position needs on this team.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess full disclosure, if I'm thinking Barron is gone, everything about him pretty much checks every box. And apparently he's had great interviews as well. But I think he's gone. If he's available, that's who I would be taking. Like, that is the direction that I would go.
That's your top guy.
Yeah. My assumption. Yeah. Sorry, Grant and Harmon, all these guys. I all love right. Barron. And frankly, like, when Barron makes Loveland disappear in a game, I think that kind of means something. When you think Loveland can go at 22, I like the guy who can make that guy disappear, especially with Jesse Minter. And part of that is just the fit. Like, I could give like a rock and a shoe to Jesse Minter, and they're probably second team all pro. So I know if I give Barron or Grant or Harmon or any of these guys to Minter, they're going to be pretty good. Circling back to the question of like, how do you view this corner room and like, what do you do with corner in the draft? It's really, really tricky because I had this issue last year where I said, like, guys, like, this is not a good corner room heading into the draft, and maybe even frankly after the draft, because they just didn't have like a great set of corners. And those things show up against a Mike Evans or a Nico Collins. And this year, if you look at, I've said it a million times, but like, if you look at their opponents they're about to play, if Evans and Collins gave you trouble, Neighbors and Jefferson and these guys and CeeDee Lamb, the receivers that are going to face this year, where you do need a number one guy, it's going to give the Chargers a lot of trouble, no matter what Jesse Minter really can do. Even someone like Marvin Harrison Jr. in 2023, they did the best they could, but ultimately, like, Marvin was Marvin and he had a great day. So they could technically address corner as early as 22. I could also see them waiting until day three, because they paid Jackson enough money where he's going to play. That guy is more than likely going to play. I've heard they're happy about both corners, but they're higher on Tar Heap still. Obviously, he played more last year. Like, that's not any secret or anything. So I think Tar Heap plays on the outside. I think Jackson's your other starter. But I at 22 or any other selection would understand corner. I completely get any decision they make at corner. But at some point, I would like them to get that guy in the room. It's a tricky group. I don't think Will Johnson's falling that far. At the same time, he's got his own question marks to answer, multiple injuries. But obviously, like, you feel good with Minter. Yeah. So I get if they take one at 22. I get if they went like Darian Porter in the second round or one of the Kansas corners in like the third or fourth round. Definitely different options they could go. But I feel better about this room because of Jesse Minter. I still don't think it's an actual good corner room.
Mm-hmm. I'll keep it quick, Andy. I think something Tyler said there is interesting, which is we kind of lack that number one corner who might be able to slow down elite wide receiver ones. As much as I love Jahdae Barron, which I do, I'm actually not sure this is the cornerback class that has a true lockdown number one corner. I know if you might dream that big and that Jahdae Barron's a Trent McDuffie, I could get on board with the argument. I do think he's pretty much that good, 5'11", 194 pounds, fast, great coverage first player. Will Johnson has some question marks, good scheme fit, but I think he gets grabby at the route stem. I think he knows his long speed isn't fantastic. Excellent zone instincts though, oily hips, trap corner, fantastic. I'd be a bit concerned with him at 22. I'd be open to it, but more concerned than Barron. And Benjamin Morrison's another guy who's fantastic, but comes with the injury issues.
He's got multiple hip injuries in his background.
So I don't know if corner at 22 is the way to go. And outside of that, I don't think it's the strongest corner class. So if it's Barron, let's have a chat about it. Otherwise, let's maybe survive with the current group for another year and let Jesse Minter work his magic.
Real quick, Alistair, what are your thoughts on Trey Amos from Ole
Miss? Yeah, I watched Trey Amos. I thought he might have been a bit better for a man heavier system. I thought he enjoyed the physical side of the game. I'll just go my notes. Quick feet to bail and mirror receiver downfield. Speed doesn't seem to be a problem covering deep vertical routes. Enough agility to squat and break on quick slants from off man. Question marks. Didn't look as comfortable to me in zone coverage. Some pointing and post-snap confusion with teammates in 3-by-1 groupings. Mm. Gets caught looking at the quarterback with insufficient coverage awareness. Blah, blah, blah. Good That's player. Fair. Not for me.
I do think that Jesse Minter would like to play more man coverage than he was able to this last year. Mm-hmm. You know, his scheme at Michigan, granted he had much better corners, you know, and he comes from this Baltimore style that does play a lot of man coverage.
He does.
So I think they played a lot of zone out of necessity. I don't think he ideally wants to keep playing that much zone. I think he wants to play a lot more man coverage. So Trey Amos and Uzariah Thomas from Florida State, although he's more like a second round option for me, but those are two guys I think would allow him to play more man coverage.
Okay. Good chat. As we're going, I'm sort of taking little notes that we can revisit at the end. It'll be interesting to see what people think. From a conservative point of view, what are some players or who is a player? What is a position of knee? Or what is a position that we should avoid drafting in that first and second round? So there's been a little bit of chat about Taiatoa. I can't pronounce his name correctly, at wide receiver, perhaps coming to us at 22. Me as Joe Hortiz, I want your opinions on guys that they kind of look cool, but it's a bit of a red flag maybe.
Specifically at 22?
Or even in the second as well.
Early-ish. So okay.
Yeah, early-ish, yeah.
Yeah, so obviously Steven mentioned Harmon. I mentioned Grant. In a negative way, I'll mention Nolan, who I think is a guy who you can see the upside. I get it. You see one of these guys every year. There is apparently quite a bit regarding off-the-field issues that I think will not at all fly with the Chargers. Won't disclose, like, don't want to overshare. But it just sounds like someone who has flashes quite a bit, but isn't super consistent, who has this quite a bit of a rumbling of off-field issues. That's a player I think I would avoid going for at 22.
Yeah, Alex Katzen on our show, who attends all the Senior Bowl stuff, said that every team like went out of their way to ask Walter Nolan if he truly loves football. And apparently Nolan got really frustrated in some interviews and did not perform super well in those interviews. Other than that, I wish we could share more, but the character concerns are very real there. In terms of pure positions, I am avoiding wide receiver at 22 in the first round. I don't think the value of this wide receiver class really is that different between what you're getting at 22 and what you could get at 55. You know, Matthew Golden shows a lot of flashes, but he had like 35% of his production in 2.5 games. Yeah. And that's a very risky bet. Like when you compile, it was a lot of fun, like objectively, like a great tape to watch. But when you compile statistical portfolios, his statistical portfolio, is one of the worst of any potential first round receivers we've ever seen, because he's just not been that productive across multiple seasons in college. Luther Burden, to me, he's fun, but he's very redundant with Ladd. I think they're basically like the same kind of player where slot, yak, vertical stem, you know, I find them very redundant. Emeka Egbuka also plays a lot in the slot. He'd be my choice of that group, but I don't think that really solves their issues. So wide receiver at 22, I'm avoiding. And then to circle back, tight end at 55, I'm avoiding. It doesn't sound like Mason Taylor is going to be available anyway, but him, Elijah Arroyo, like that next group of tight ends, Harold Fannin Jr., there's a lot more question marks to me about how they translate to the NFL. And so I'm avoiding those two positions in the first two rounds. I just talked about Colston Love in the first round, but when you're isolating by each round and position, that's kind of where I would stand.
Mm. Good discussion. I'll stick on the red flag topic. A few red flags for me. Guys, I want to distinguish between like character off-field red flags and on-field red flags.
Sure,
and,
yeah.
You know, we might want to decide which is important and not important to us. Mm-hmm. Walter Nolan, concern with me is you hear the off-field stuff, and when I watched him, I watched 4 games and I saw 5 dumb late hits, and I saw him arguing with referees, and I saw effort that ran hot and cold. So forget the off-field stuff and maturity concerns. I didn't like the consistency I saw on the field.
That's totally fair.
Conversely, you've got a couple of guys off the field, James Pierce Jr., Mike Green,
yep,
both edge rushers at 22. James Pierce Jr., they talk about poor character and doesn't work hard and whatever else. Mike Green, a bit more concerning. 2 women have claimed sexual assault-related allegations about him in the past. On the field, I don't really have too many concerns. Maybe a few about James Pierce occasionally, but I like most of what I see from him. Mike Green, I love what I see on the field. I think his football character is outstanding. He plays like a bat out of hell. That would be purely one of the best possible results on draft night from a on-the-field football perspective. Teams just need to make sure they're comfortable with what has happened in his past off the field and what that augurs for the future. Yeah. Last one, Luther Burden, because you touched on him, Stephen. He's another guy who, on the field, I just saw him take a few too many reps off. I saw him demonstrably upset at Cook, his quarterback.
Yeah.
I saw run blocking effort being poor.
Non-existent, I would say.
Non-existent. And you hear off the field, he was a 5-star recruit, stayed in Missouri, and you hear a bit of diva stuff about him and reports from interviews with him, not so good. He's explosive, don't get me wrong. You can see why he's a first-round caliber prospect. He makes these game-changing 50-yard touchdown plays. You just go, freak. But he takes plays off. I don't know if that's a Harbaugh type of guy for me.
Yeah, this getting to your point about the edge rushers, this is a tricky edge rush class because Abdul Carter is insane. I don't know if you've watched. I know Tyler has it. I don't know if you've watched him, but he's insane. Outside of that, there's just a lot of questions. Shamar Stewart from Texas A&M is an athletic freak, like tested right next to Myles Garrett. But he's got like 4.5 college sacks. Like he's not productive at all. Mykael Williams, great run defender, big physical, not a ton of pass rush production, not a ton of true pass rush reps. You know, he very rarely got to play actual edge rusher. And then there's a lot of tweener types, you know, Nick Scourton or Scorton, however you say it. He's kind of a tweener type, I would say. Savion Jones, these guys, very tweener-ish. And then there's a lot of smaller guys, a lot of smaller, fast guys who I think could bring some value to the Chargers. But it's a tricky edge rusher class to sort because there's just a lot of question marks. And so I think that's why maybe a guy like Donovan Ezeraku has kind of been shooting up boards recently is because he's very clean. You know exactly what you're getting. There's no character concerns that we know of. By all accounts, he's aced the interview process, tested lights out. I have some concerns about his run defense tape, but he can get after the quarterback. You know, he's fast, he's bendy, he's twitchy. He can actually like do some pass
speed
rush
to,
moves.
Speed to power a bit.
Yeah, he's not, the power profile is not my favorite, but if I had to choose an edge rusher, he's probably the one, just because he has the fewest amount of question marks in this class.
Yeah, I can't say much about the entire draft class for the edge rushers, at least. But those early guys, I mean, Shamar Stewart has more missed tackles than quarterback hits in his college career. And like, that's not great for a player that might go top 10. And I feel like every year there's that guy who's like, we can make that player work and we can get him to do this and that. And it just doesn't work out over the guys that are just, hey, good football player.
Yeah.
So I could understand why like Ezeraku would have a better year one than maybe Stewart. And maybe Stewart in 3 years is proving me wrong.
But guys, with our coach, Tyler, with our coaches, I'm with you. Football player production or trust our coaches, because Shamar Stewart's effort's awesome. Very good run defender. I'm a bit lower than him in general because I lean towards football players with demonstrated production and just trust to bull rush every rep. But get him in with Mike Alston and Jesse Minter.
Right.
You've got your ball of clay who is as athletic as Garrett and Mario Williams and Trayvon Walker. Maybe with this coaching staff, he's the type of guy you do consider.
Yeah, I think, I don't remember where the Ravens took Owe. I think that was the end of the first round when they took him. Wasn't a player that I loved, but he had all the raw potential. I think his RAS was awesome as well. And he's turned into a very solid contributor for them. But I'm glad you mentioned Ed Rusher for sure. Regarding receiver, I haven't watched McMillan because I never was going to really watch McMillan because he was never supposed to be there. And now apparently he might be there. So I will have to watch them. The best way I can describe the receivers kind of in that range for the Chargers at 22, other than McMillan, who I have not watched, is that McConkey would be my receiver one in this class. Now that's specific to me. I loved McConkey. He was my wide receiver five, but he would be my receiver one over Golden, over Egbuka in this class. And so do you take someone I like less than McConkey at 22? I don't know. I get what you guys are going for with like that second, maybe third round, depending on who's there, that being a kind of a sweet spot. Tricky after that on day three. Oh, then today for edge rushers, we did a seven-round mock draft with Steven, Alex, and I. Took 30 players, and none of them were a pure edge rusher. And that's kind of how the class might be.
Yeah.
Again, I haven't watched everybody, but...
It's when you're doing these mock drafts, it's really tricky to find a spot where you would want to take an edge rusher for the Chargers. So we kind of floated the idea of like using the sixth round picks to trade up and maybe have like 2 fourth round selections kind of thing. That would help allow them to find like a true edge rusher. But yeah, overall the edge rush class, I think I went into it thinking like, oh man, like this edge, there's so many names, right? But then Alistair kind of laid it out. Mike Green has the question marks. James Pierce has the question marks. Shamar Stewart, Michael Williams, all these guys have question marks, and you can kind of just keep going down the list. So edge is tricky for the Chargers. I think that might become kind of like a post-draft signing. See what kind of veteran.
I could see being a third or fourth, right? Like a Josiah Stewart, Michigan, Oladejo, UCLA, David Walker, Central Arkansas. Maybe that's the kind of spot that you would think about it, but I totally agree.
Yeah, top two rounds, I think, for edge rusher, I'm probably avoiding. Unless Mike Green has had like, you know, a real come to Jesus moment and just like a completely different man than when he was a few years ago at Virginia. Mm-hmm. We all make mistakes, right? But that to me is something that the Chargers specifically are probably not okay with.
Yeah. It's an interesting one because, you know, we talk about the opposition that the Chargers are facing this year and the need to either have a true CB1 or you generate the pressure on the passer by boosting up the edge group, because we've lost Joey Bosa, Khalil Mack's turning 34. Thule is great, but it's going to be a big leap up in terms of what's expected of him. Bud Dupree flashes, but I wouldn't be relying on him on one side of the line there. So either, you know, you do go high and take one, or as Al said earlier, like there is a bit of a drop off. So it's, from that sort of first round caliber to the rest, and obviously all these question marks and red flags. So it's a really interesting kind of thing to navigate, is how Jesse Minter can put together his various pieces of the defense to succeed against this bevy of opposition that have dangerous weapons, and we need to find a way to combat that and win a fair chunk of those games. But yeah, you've sort of touched on a couple of guys in the like the day late day two, day early day three that, you know, might be able to work into the fold. So that's great. I want to go, like, I feel like there's a lot of chat and noise, and I'm one of the guys that maybe at 22 it's a little bit different, but I'm not big on running backs in the first round. But you know, I, as I said, I didn't watch a heap of tape, but throughout the college season, Ashton Jeanty was just unbelievable. And there's noise of Amari and Hampton being mocked to the Chargers, Trayvon Henderson, the two guys from Ohio, Quinshon Judkins. How do we see the current running back group with the addition of Najee Harris? Obviously, J.K. Dobbins hasn't been either cast out or brought back. How do we see the running back group as being a position of need for the Chargers heading into this draft?
I think you could look, well, okay, so full disclosure, I took a running back in the first round of a mock we just did today, although I got to pick last after other players had already gone.
Yeah.
So it was like getting my first option, but he was my sixth option.
Yeah.
So someone like Hampton, I would understand, but overall, I would prefer to wait just a little bit. This is a class where you can wait. I think Steven mentioned today that Dane Brugler said he had 36 draftable grades on running backs this year, which is the most he's ever had. I have not watched 36 running backs. I can't imagine how many he has that watch that don't have draftable grades. But I have, I think, enjoyed almost every single running back that I've watched so far. And they all bring different variety. There's even some like exciting like bigger running backs later or pass catching guys later or whatever. They do need to take somebody. And I'm feeling if it's not Hampton, it could very well be Henderson in round two or Martinez in round three or Harvey in round four. Like there are so many good running backs in this class. I think they need to take somebody. It's just a debate of, do you want someone who complements Najee's style? Maybe people call him like a bruiser or a short yardage or whatever guy. So do you want someone who's explosive? Like your J.K. Dobbins from last year to Gus Edwards and what he was supposed to be last year, never really lived up to.
Or do you take specialist? Yeah.
Yes. Or do you take someone who is like Najee Harris, because Najee Harris is on a 1-year deal before they signed him and got the contract out, we thought, okay, this is like a 3-year deal, maybe 2-year deal, whatever. It's a 1-year deal for not all that much. So I could see them taking someone who's just like Najee and just kind of doubling down there or just finding someone completely different. The only thing I know is that Greg Roman will not throw to a running back. So probably not one of them.
Not a pass game.
Which is so frustrating because there are some great pass catching running backs in this class that I would love to see next to Najee Harris. But I think with Najee Harris, you have a guy who is going to consistently, give you the yards that are required. That's kind of how I would describe him is he is going to hit what you open for him. He's just very consistent. He is very able to just be that reliable running back. And so I would like to see somebody next to him who can, you know, rip off a 40-yard gain and rip off a 60-yard gain, you know, much like J.K. Dobbins was last year. And I think this is a great group for that. If the Chargers want to just be this hyper-efficient running attack and we're going to get two Najee Harrises in here, I would also understand that. And there's a great group for this class as well. This running back class is insanely good. I have graded 17 running backs, and there's still more guys that I like want to get to, but I'm going on vacation for 10 days soon, and so I'm not going to be able to get to them. So it's just, you know, there are options the Chargers could take at every round. And we just talked about edge rusher, how it's kind of tricky to find some corner, kind of tricky to find some. They could take a running back at any spot, and I would totally get it. And to me, the sweet spot is like day two, second round, third round, where you can truly get the most value, where you're still getting a high end level of talent, but you're not necessarily like paying the premium of the first round pick. So I love Omarion Hampton. He's on my list for potential options at 22, but I generally prefer to see them wait and get one in the second round, third round. And, you know, it's kind of like Tyler laid out, like if you take this player here, who can you get later to kind of stack up? I think it's much easier to find a running back later in this class than the other positions that the Chargers need.
Yeah. Same. If Hampton is the pick, my response would kind of be not thrilled, but I get it. Very good back. But I tend to have a philosophy, take generational backs in round one. I don't quite think Hampton's that, especially in a deep running back class. So if we want to have a conversation about would we trade up for Ashton Jeanty if somehow he got to 10, 11, 12, oh, I could get around talking about that conversation.
That's expensive. Otherwise, to go from 22 to
it will be
10,
very expensive. 11, 12, but right? he might be that type, that quality of back. And we've invested the resources in this offensive line. It might be a good time to plop in an Ashton Jeanty and make that really the focus of the offense. Otherwise, I would hold, as they've said, lots of running backs in this class.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is this where we can talk about a player that we're much higher on than other people? Because I have a guy that I would like to bring up here.
Sounds like let's you want to talk it. About yeah, something,
let's hear it.
I love Damian Martinez from Miami. He is one of my favorite running backs to watch. And it's kind of becoming a little, you know, all of the film guys like him now. But the first thing I always look for in a running back is, if your offensive line sucks, how really like good can you be? Like, can you create yards when your offensive line cannot? And Damian Martinez does that consistently. He did it consistently at Oregon State, and he does that consistently at Miami. His ability to make people miss in a phone booth is right next to Ashton Jeanty in this class. He's not as athletic as Ashton Jeanty. He's not as big as Ashton Jeanty, but his ability to make people miss behind the line of scrimmage and create those yards is second in this class in my regard. So I love him. I think he's incredibly consistent. He's not the most athletic guy in the world, but he is going to turn 2 yard runs into 6 yard runs and 3 yard runs into 8 yard runs.
Our scheme.
Yeah, so good. And he has like a true, like, I'm a workhorse closer mentality, where he is going to end games and he is going to make you regret having to tackle him. So I love Damian Martinez. I see him continually get mocked in like the fourth, fifth round. I think he's a second round player all day. I think he should be a top 60 selection in this class. I currently have him graded higher than Quinshon Judkins. I have him higher than DJ Giddens. So I love Damian Martinez. If the Chargers took him at 55, I will be the only person who is probably excited, but I would be very excited.
Ooh, where do I have Damian Martinez? I definitely have him close to the top five. Or do I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 6? Did I not add him to my big board? That's hilarious. Well, I do like him quite a bit for all the reasons that you said.
He's not. You don't have him on your sheet?
Hold.
Cog's 10.
There he is.
I don't have a draft.
He's on my grade.
Yeah, it's cool.
Okay, everybody, we're going to control F this. We're going to do some serious detective work here. Oh, yeah, there he is. I have him at... Okay, but the disclosure that I did not add... Wow, do I really have him as... Oh, I have Armour as RB4.
Okay.
There we go. Yeah. That was a long way to get me to say RB4.
Yeah. To me, you know, if you're into advanced analytics in terms of EPA per rush, he has the second highest EPA per rush in this class outside of Ashton Jeanty. So he's very, very efficient, just consistently hits those, you know, big gains that you need from a running back. And I love that he produced in a scheme like Miami that's very gap and power related, and then also outside zone related in Oregon State. So I'm a huge fan of Damian Martinez.
Alistair, do you have any high upside guys that are not necessarily, don't have to be running backs, just general upside guys that maybe we can find at 55, like someone, a Damian Martinez?
Yeah, okay. I'll go to a wide receiver and I'll take a flyer on Trey Harris from Ole Miss. And nice. I know people will have different views on this, but
Tyler loves him.
If you're looking like a vertical X, take the top off, pretty good hands, contested catch, pretty freakish in a lot of respects. And if it hits, you're looking at like a true wide receiver one in the league. I think Trey Harris is that guy. The caveat is he comes from an offense that's very difficult to project to the next level. They basically run three routes, a hitch, a go, skinny post, or, you know, the deeper slant kind of thing. Very limited route tree. And as a result of that system at Ole Miss, they get very little press coverage because they have 2x2 stacked formations, so defenses play off the ball, so you don't really get to see him do a lot of NFL stuff.
Yeah.
But other guys,
there's relevance. From this there's type... relevance to the passing game of the Chargers with that, isn't there? Because, you know, if you've got two guys on the outside, or you're going to tend to have one of those receivers running that go, and like vertically while you have the tight ends inside, as Greg Roman likes to sort of run.
That's why we brought Mike Williams in to do that for a year. Guys who've played in these kind of offenses before and have hit include AJ Brown, DK Metcalf, you know. I'm not saying he's them. Mm-hmm. That's why it's not a true comp. But if you want to shoot for the stars, Jack, if you want to take a risk where I think the wide receiver class has a lot of wide receiver two, possession receiver styles of players. And I even view Jaden Higgins from Iowa State a little bit more like that. I know some are super high on him. I thought he had some issues separating, especially on outside release on vertical routes. Liked him. I've got him as my sixth wide receiver. But Trey Harris, although I've got him at about eighth or ninth, if you want to go for the upside, he would be my guy at the end of the second round.
Yeah, I have. I love Trey Harris. I haven't settled into exactly where I'll have him, but I do like him quite a bit. I do have him over Higgins at this point. Regarding separation, I would suggest or posit the idea that Higgins' contested catch, the frequency and how often he had to make contested catches was not just quarterback, but also the lack of separation. And therefore, he had to make contested catches because he did not separate. So I had some issues there. Reception profile of him was not great either, which maybe suggests that the separating, because it's not based on like quarterback play specifically. That is more just the receiver.
Are you getting open? Is like it's his whole thing, and like he doesn't care how much separation you're creating. He just charts like, are you getting open?
Yeah, right. So definitely concerns there. I do like Harris. I'm a stickler for yards per route run versus man, and he's the leader in this class in that. Generally, that does help. Trey Harris is a player I will be very happy if they take it 55.
You got to give it the other view though, Jack. If like those stats look good for him, but his yards per route run on man, they didn't face a lot of man, and they also played some really poor, lowly ranked schools where he went off on them. So you just need to be mindful with every player. There is like one way of looking at it. There's another. That's why we're having these discussions.
Hmm. Yeah, I think
Tyler, did you have an upside guy other than Trey Harris that we could be looking at in that third to fourth round?
Oh, third to fourth round. Give me RJ Harvey all day long. That's a player. That's my favorite player in the class. Is he the best player? No, I don't think RJ Harvey is the best player. And there's definitely issues with pass protection. But this is a guy who I love good film and I love great numbers. And when they come together and the RAS is 90th percentile, you're feeling pretty good. 90th percentile athlete. He's number one in EPA per rush. One of four running backs in this class that forced a missed tackle every three carries. The highest rate of runs of 10 or more against stacked boxes the last two classes. He's fifth in yards per route run. He's a former quarterback. He threw a touchdown in the Senior Bowl. He's thrown a touchdown as a running back against, I forget what team, but that was like 2022. So yeah, the RAS, the film, the numbers, all those things are amazing. Getting about that 3-4 range, you know, he is 5'8", 206 pounds, not the biggest running back. I know it's going to be blasphemous, but they do have the same 10-yard split. He did remind me, and I try not to do this often, but he did remind me of Darren Sproles.
Ooh. I'll throw another one out here. I've talked a lot about this guy, but Mitchell Evans is my tight end of choice from Notre Dame. If the Chargers do miss out on Colston Loveland in the first round, Mitchell Evans definitely right now profiles as a blocker. But if you look at what he was able to do in 2023 when pre-ACL tear, he was right up there neck and neck with some of the best tight end receiving film as well. So he's a contested catch guy. He can stretch the seam. He did end up running like a 4.7-ish, so he's not super athletic, but he can get the job done there. So I love his style. I love his ability to block. I know the Chargers don't necessarily need like more blocking. They're kind of set. But Will Dissly is a free agent after next season, and so is Tucker Fisk. And I think he has enough receiving chops as a separator at the top of routes where he can create some advantages, you know, in the passing game. He's not ever going to be like a Colston Loveland high end, you know, as Alistair pointed out, like potential Travis Kelce type, but I think he can be a serviceable, reliable potential like tight end two in the future. And when the Chargers don't have like any real pass catching tight ends, I could kind of understand, let's just get three or four guys to throw out the problem. And that would be kind of what you're getting in Mitchell Evans.
Cool. I think it's really important to like after, well, last year we landed Ladd McConkey, but you know, as the free agency kind of passed and we didn't take a Devontae Adams or like that wide receiver one, I think it's really important to get a few names out there that are really viable options as that guy that can kind of take the top off and maybe grow into the wide receiver one for Chargers fans, so that if Colson Loveland isn't taken, or like, you know, we go down the DT path at 22, Chargers fans aren't blowing up going, what is going on with this team? And, you know, feeling like Green Bay Packer fans, we're just never going to draft a good wide receiver, that kind of thing. It's good to know that there are viable options, you know, in those later rounds for your listening. But yeah, look, we've gone edge. I think in the like last few minutes that we run this topic, we know that this team likes to build from the trenches. We've talked about the defensive side of the line. Where do things sit? And we've spoken about the need for possibly a left guard situation, or at least a challenger to the Zion Johnson if he stays there or if he moves into center. Where are we on the offensive line in this draft, guys?
Steven?
Yes, Steven, you can take this, man, because I've done the first like 8 offensive linemen, but if we're talking second, third, fourth round, I'm still getting through it.
Yeah, I think if you're talking second round, that's probably a Tate Ratledge question. He does have some injury history to him. So he had tightrope surgery on an ankle. He's had a Liz Frank injury, so he does have some foot issues. Yeah. But he is the most athletic offensive lineman in the class, and I think his tape is incredibly reliable, versatile, and just gives you a lot of potential upside. So you're getting him. I think if he did not have the injury history, this is a guy who would be in first round territory. I think his film and athletic profile is that good. So you're potentially getting an injury discount. You're also inheriting like the injury concern. So you, like Alex just said, both sides of the coin there. I love Miles Frazier from LSU. He's a guy who has started at least one game at every spot along the line, except for center in his college career. He played left tackle, right tackle at Florida International, and then has played both guard spots and right tackle at LSU. He's not the most athletic guy, but he plays with a ton of pop. He's got really strong hands, great anchor. And a lot of the times you kind of look for the opposite of like what you're currently dealing with, you know, like you date a girl and then you go to the opposite end of the spectrum, right? Miles Frazier is incredibly high IQ awareness kind of player. He is always on it with the stunts, on it with the blitzes. He's consistently looking for work and making people, you know, pay. If he's free and an edge rusher does an inside spin, that guy is going down 10 times out of 10. Like Miles Frazier is on it from a mental standpoint. I think he's great as a puller. So he's my guy probably in the third round. That's who you're looking at. Day 3 is a little tricky. That's where it does kind of shallow out. I think you have some good options day 2. But day 3 is probably more where you're looking for, let's get a center of the future option in here. If you want to maybe try and get solidified there as opposed to taking a true left guard competitor. I do think the guard group does shallow out quite a bit. So Drew Kendall from Boston College is kind of my day 3 center of choice right now. The Chargers did send Mike Devlin, the offensive line coach, to his pro day. So they are definitely interested. He's a little undersized, but he plays with a real mean streak. You know, he's got the snatch move down pat where he will make guys, you know, just fall over consistently in pass protection. He can reach, he can pull, he can do all the things, he can duo. But he does have a little shorter arms and he is a little undersized, but I do think he would be a nice scheme fit for the Chargers. So if you're looking for a starting guard potential, you probably got to talk about that in round 2, round 3. Other than that, you're probably talking about a potential center of the future on day 3.
What, Steven, have you looked at the Jonas Savanaya? He's when I watched the combine, he stuck out to me as someone, obviously his profile says that he's probably more suited to a guard position, but he kind of has that mean streak. He's got, I thought the way that he moved, because he's that sort of Samoan Tongan background, he's got freakish athleticism and kind of pairs that kind of suits well with our gap scheme. Do you reckon that there's going to be some doubt from teams, you know, where does he play tackle or guard? And do you reckon we could get him in that that sort of third round, or do you reckon he's going before that? And what are your thoughts on him? Because he was the guy that sticks out to me that goes, "Ooh, I could see him working," you know, in our offensive line.
Yeah, so he's played both tackle spots in college, and he has one start at right guard. So he's done it before. He had like this, the Big 12 conference did their own pro day where every prospect from the conference came instead of like each individual college. And at that pro day, he said that he wants to play guard. Like he feels like his style and his tenacious mentality will play better at guard. And I agree with him. And I think it's great that he's kind of jumping ahead of that. To me, he's just somebody that I think should go before pick 55, to be completely honest with you. I think you look at this guard group, and again, it's really, really good on day two. You have Donovan Jackson in there from Ohio State as well. I don't love Tyler Booker personally, but in the second round, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think Gray Zabel is a good guard as well. So you have good guards that should go in the range of like the 30s and 40s for these teams who need offensive line help. And that's where Jonah Savainea should fall in line. I love his potential in this offense. I just kind of think he will be gone by 55. If he's not, yes, I would gladly take him. I do have him graded higher than Tate Ratledge, and he doesn't have the injury concerns. So that's a good potential spot there for him. Really powerful anchor is my favorite thing about him. He does not let power get to him at all, which is an absolute must in this NFL world where every team has a dominant defensive tackle. You got to be able to anchor down. He's got a great anchor, great hands, run blocker, athleticism, all that kind of stuff. So I'm glad you brought him up because I am a big fan of his as well.
Awesome. Thank you. That's really good analysis. Thank you very much.
Of course. I'm glad we got to offensive line stuff. It makes me happy that we can
say you guys watch Jalen Rivers at all? The tackle from Miami. So Brandon Thorne has him as a guard, and I think he'll end up being a guard, but he also stayed behind at either pro day or short combat or whatever it was to practice center because teams wanted to see him play center as well. Keep an eye on Rivers because there could be a Rivers to Herbert snap connection.
So what was his name, Tyler? So was
Jalen Rivers. Jalen Rivers out of Miami. Brandon Thorne has him pretty high. I like him quite a bit too. There's an injury history there that is concerning, but when you're starting to get that third, fourth round range, not everybody's obviously clean. So I could definitely see them being interested in him. The Chargers clearly don't mind taking a bigger tackle guy and moving him inside. The Ravens had plenty of guys who ended up being a center for them that were tackles as well. So I would just keep an eye on that one, I think. And again, for the Rivers Herbert vibe alone.
Yeah, Emory Jones from LSU is another one that a lot of people have talked about as like a guard convert. I didn't love his tape, but I at the time when I watched him, I was watching him as a tackle. So he's somebody that I, if I had more time and wasn't going on vacation soon, I would revisit and watch as a potential guard convert. And then Wyatt Milam from West Virginia is another one that people have kind of suggested that he play guard in the NFL. I happen to think he could hold up at tackle.
I agree.
He's 6'7", so again, kind of that similar profile, but he doesn't check the arm length. So he's got 32-inch arms. He's got little short arms, which is unfortunate because he's so tall. but he's a good player, man. I think the tape is really good. So again, I think he could play tackle, but I know some in the offensive line community believe he should be playing guard at the next level. So maybe that one. But yeah, if you're looking second round, you're talking about Savainea, Tate Ratledge, third round, Miles Frazier. And then I think you're kind of pivoting towards let's just find a center option of the future.
Yeah. Positional versatility is a big thing that Harbaugh looks for. And
yeah.
And they appreciate is, you know, a guy that can play three to four spots across the line in case of something bad happened. Because, gosh, if something happened to Slater or Joe Alt, that's big trouble for this offensive line, especially if you've
got... I'm very curious if that does happen. Would they slide Pipkins out there or would they move Becton or what? So I am very curious about that potential scenario. Hopefully it never happens.
Of course. We don't want to ruminate on worst case scenario, but you know, you've got to be prepared for these. And I think that's one thing, even though the signings haven't been flashy, they are preparing for, you know, protection essentially. Scouts, anything further before we move along, Jack, do you as GM, do you anything you want to know more about or have you got your
well, I'm going to going? Yeah, it's good. It's not necessarily a draft board as such, but I'm going to
just ignored
hold...
everything they've said and just done your own thing.
No, I haven't. I'm going to hold the scouts to account now. All right. So I'll sort of take us through sort of discussion point by discussion point. So for the listeners, if we have someone like a Kenneth Grant, a Colston Loveland, a Derek Harmon, or a Jade Barron in round one, starting with Alistair, going to Tyler, going to Stephen, this is it. This is when you got to pick. Who are you taking, Alistair? Go, of those four.
Loveland.
Tyler?
Grant.
Stephen?
Loveland.
Okay, it seems like we're taking Loveland with our first pick. I'm sorry, Tyler. Unfortunately, your other two scouts have sort of gone over there. This is not necessarily a selection, but red flags for the Bolts. We really shouldn't be looking at wide receiver early in the draft. We're looking at tight end, perhaps, if we don't hit Loveland. Stephen, I think you said we need to wait until a little bit later. There's quite a big drop-off. Edge, we're really not looking for. So kind of if we do draft an edge, it's a bit of a red flag from us from these discussions. Then we're like, are we taking running backs? You know, we're looking at, I think there's versatility from what everyone said, is that you can find someone in the second round, you can find someone in the fifth, sixth, seventh, which is good because I think the Chargers do need a running back. Stephen, you're looking at Damian Martinez. You're also looking at tight end Mitchell Evans if we don't get Loveland in the first. Alistair, you're looking at Trey Harris. Tyler, you're looking at RJ Harvey, this athletic freak that comes out of Miami. And then when we got to the offensive line, names like Tate Ratledge, Miles Frazer, we've got sort of Drew Kendall from Boston College, Savanaya, all those guys might be taken before the second round. And to finish us off, we've got a name of Jalen Rivers out of Miami as well, the Rivers to Herbert connection from Tyler. So we can put all those up on our Twitter as well. We can give it to the GAC. I'll sort of condense it. But those are some really good names, I think, for our listeners to be looking at. I reckon that's a really targeted Bolts draft. So thank you very much.
Yeah, no problem. We awesome. Could have spent another hour just on the D tackles alone.
Yeah.
Defensive tackle and running back, man. It's an awesome year to need one of those guys.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It does sort of bode well that there are potential options working on the outside, like a Mark Andrews or a Dallas Goedert. If Warren and Loveland go before 22 and you know, you've got a pick of potentially a great defensive tackle, like it's not the be all and end all missing out on one of those guys when there is a supplementary option, you know, floating around the free agency market, but plenty to sort of sink your teeth into if you aren't quite over all the prospects and sort of where maybe the mindset and the direction of the Chargers head office is going heading into the draft. So thank you, the three of you guys, for all the work that you've done for, you know, watching tape, putting it all together, making it relevant to Chargers scheme and Chargers football. And just before we let you to Yankee Doodles go, it's the TDU Aussie quiz. We can't have an international guest without it, so we're each going to ask a question of you and see how you go stacked up against the last time you did it and all the other guys we get on the show. I'm going to kick things off with the first question. I couldn't leave out a question on, you know, a venomous spider or insect, something that'll kill you. Everyone thinks, oh, you go to Australia and there's a million
the Chargers. I know.
Yeah. So my question is, what is the nickname given to the newest and largest member of the Sydney funnel web spider species, arguably the most venomous spider in the world? Is it A, Aragog, B, Chompers, C, Shelob, or D, Big Boy?
Oh, so they give them like nicknames. Okay, so I recognize two of those, obviously. Uh-huh.
What was the second
Aragog
one?
Aragog and Sheila. What were the other two?
Chompers. In Australia, like big teeth are your chompers, yeah.
That feels too obvious.
In Australia, he said. You know, I don't know. Like, I feel like there's some context to that. But Sheila is also, well, they filmed it in New Zealand.
My brain's going like to the last one just because the other ones are like pop culture or too obvious. So I'm gonna go Big Dog, or what was it? Big Dog?
Big Boy.
Big Boy. I'm gonna go with Big Boy.
All right, I'll rally with Steven there and go with Big Boy.
One from one. Well done, fellas.
Yes. Good boy. Yeah. My goodness. Okay.
Three and a half inch leg span on this.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
Yeah. So when you're looking at measurables, this spider's got them.
So I won't be visiting for the game if you ever have one, then, I guess.
You got about 15, you got about 15 minutes before your insides turn to mush if this guy gets his chompers on.
Really selling it for me. Sounds good.
Just don't go to Sydney. No one wants to go to Sydney anyway. No,
wait, they're in Sydney?
Yeah, it's the Sydney funnel web spider, so central coast of Australia.
Great.
Probably like the most touristy city in your guys' country.
They're not like in the city as such. It would be in more rural areas.
Yeah, you're not going to just bump into one on the train, like carrying a briefcase on the way to work.
Yeah, it's sort of more of a, you'd find them in very quiet
in your backyard in Sydney.
Well, in your backyard, all right, I've got one. This is a bit of slang, and we all know that we love that. What does the Australian slang term dobber mean? Is it A, a lazy person, B, a tattletale or informer, C, a type of sandwich, or D, a skilled surfer? So dobber. What does a dobber do?
Can you use it in a sentence, or is that too obvious?
Country of origin, no.
I can. I'll use it in a sentence. It's like, don't be such a dibber dobber. You're not a very good friend.
Can I get the answers again?
A lazy person, a tattletale or informer, a type of sandwich, or a skilled surfer. A dibber dobber.
I'm going to go with the second one, then, the tattletale informer type.
Yeah, let's do it.
Two from two. We're doing all right. There you go. A dibber dobber. That's what
good
I do.
Good job asking for
the catering questions out the door. That example, that very strategic by the two scouts, but he's just completely given away the game.
The perfect way to use that in a sentence is, what is a dobber? That's a sentence. You just completely gave it away. Type of sandwich, you're a bad friend. You're a type of sandwich. Unbelievable.
Hey, I don't know what's Australian. Yeah,
all right, you're a chance to go 3 out of 3 on the Aussie quiz.
Out of interest, have any of us developed a bonus question? Because I haven't.
I could do one on the fly. All right, this is, as you saw from Jack's beautiful synthesis of our previous segment, he's a teacher, very good at distilling information. I know you guys have teaching backgrounds. Teachers also have to be good listeners. And there was a clue earlier in this show about this answer. Which Australian Rugby Union Super 12 team did recent signing tight end Jordan Pataia play for since 2018? A, the New South Wales Waratahs. B, the ACT Brumbies. C, the Queensland Reds. D, the Western Force.
I want us first instinct is the Queensland team.
Sure.
Final answer?
Yeah. You got to say one different answer than me, dude.
Well, once he gave the sentence on the last one, I was in agreement with you for sure.
It's a joint answer. You're co-hosts.
Okay,
work
fine.
Work it out.
Queensland is my
joint
guess.
Answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have to do a joint answer here. So I will agree there.
3 out of 3.
Yes.
Oh, you've done it. It's safe.
We haven't had a 3 out of 3.
Unbelievable. We're going to cop so much shit from the regular TDU listeners. Everyone who listens and enjoys the TDU quiz is all about us making an absolute fool of all of our guests for never getting a question right.
So. Yeah, I think last time we went 1 for 6.
I'm really 0 for, I'm 3 for 6 currently, I think.
Well, that's phenomenal. 3 from 3.
Well, we'll hold off the bonus question for next time, perhaps, but that's the first we've... That's
well
the first
done.
We've ever 100% had on the show.
Amazing.
Do you guys listen to Mr. Sunday Movies?
Success.
No, we don't.
Oh, okay. Well, I got you on an Australian podcast.
Yeah. Damn, I feel like we've let the Aussies down.
To be fair, I never would have guessed Daba unless I hit Jack.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I knew it was your fault, Jack.
God, I'm a teacher. I want everyone to succeed. It's part of my heart. Everyone can achieve, Andy.
Yeah,
I appreciate that. Thank you. Good job, Stephen, using like your counselor powers to get the question, the sentence out of him.
Follow up questions.
Yeah.
Brilliant breakdown, guys. Thanks so much again for your time today. It's been awesome having you guys on the show. Awesome picking your brains about this, and just all in all, like a really great chat. And you've done really well on the quiz, so. All in all, awesome day. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, guys. We appreciate you having you. Love the format of this. You know, just going back and forth with Alistair was a lot of fun. You know, I do always appreciate his insights, and I'm glad we agree on some things, glad we disagree on some things. Tyler and I tend to see things very similarly, so it's always good to get, you know, a third voice in here that will make us kind of question things a little bit more. So we appreciate that.
Yes, awesome. Love the great format. Happy to have been a part of this quiz. I need something behind me that says I went 3 for 3. Everything you need to sign it. I'll take down the Keenan Allen jersey or one of my graduation things and put up the TDU quiz. So
I'm sure Jack's got a template of a certificate of achievement and some gold stars that he can send to you guys, and you can chuck it up.
Sure.
Thank you. I will pay for postage and shipping.
guys, listeners out there, you know where to find these guys on the Guilty as Charged podcast. I'm sure you've got some awesome stuff coming up. Looking forward to seeing what you've got as the off season progresses and following the draft. A lot of exciting content all round for NFL fans coming right up. As for the three of us, we'll be back next week chatting some more off season stuff. We'll find some stuff. We'll see you then. Thanks for joining us on TDU. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, bye, guys.
Bye.
Firing, he's got Floyd turning, got it, zigzag, 10, 5, high step, touchdown, San Diego!
Woo! Good night to all!